Before we start this episode of CFD's Podcast for Good, let's give a little shout out to our presenting sponsor, WSECU. WSECU has been a part of the community since 1957 and has been supporting the CFD in a big way since 2011. Thanks to them, we were able to bring you spectacular events and promotions like the Masquerade Ball, Golf for Veterans Tournament, and our incredible First Week to Give, which has been responsible for raising tens of thousands of dollars in donations to charities throughout our community. For more on how WSECU serves charities throughout our community, visit www.wsecu.org/community. And of course, visit our website to find out more about our incredible partnership with WSECU. And now, here's the show. So what we should do is start off the podcast just yelling at each other.
Dispute and conflict.
Be like, I need a dispute conflict negotiator.
I need someone to help me talk to you.
I'm so tired of your crap.
Fact.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's a fact. Oh, yeah. Wow. I don't know. That seemed a bit much.
No, I think we need.
You stepped over a line.
I did.
You stepped over a line,
it's
Lucas.
Because I don't know when to stop.
You don't know where the line is.
That's why I need a dispute resolution conflict person in my life.
You're damn right.
Yeah.
That's what these people are.
Hey.
Oh, look at that! What a coincidence.
Get in my life.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Season 3, Episode 28 of the CFD's Podcast for Good. My name is Philip Kerrigan. I'm the Program Manager of the Washington State Combined Fund Drive, and this is...
Heather Lucas, the Fiscal and Policy Coordinator for the Washington State Combined Fund Drive.
That is correct. Yeah. And for the first time in a while...
Welcome back.
Yeah,
Philip.
Yeah, I get to actually interview somebody on this show.
Yay!
We are talking today about conflicts and disputes, which is actually sort of perfectly apropos for our 2019 campaign theme, which is not actually about conflict and dispute. It's actually about getting over those and connecting with each
Choosing
other.
Choosing to be different instead of fighting about every single little thing.
That's right. So what's really cool is that we sat down with an organization called the Dispute Resolution Center of Thurston County, which is also apparently choosing to be different in this particular day and age and actually try and work on people's disputes and conflicts. We sat down with Joe Sanders, the community engagement manager, and he talked to us a little bit about what they do and what he has noticed and a very neat program involving kids.
Yeah, totally. It was really, really cool to see that. Like, immediately, though, like, you'll hear him on the podcast, but the immediate was like, get them while they were young thought into my head.
Right.
And I thought of cigarettes immediately. That's part of the generation I come from, right?
Yeah. Well, you are Generation XZ Zennials. We're both of the same, of course.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're somewhat cynical at the beginning.
At the beginning.
Yeah. but in talking with Joe, one of the things that he talked about is, of course, this very he'll hit on it more as you go through it, is this very neat program they do with kids, getting to them younger in school and how they've already seen great results in Tumwater Middle School.
Yeah.
He also talked about what people bring to conflict often, which are these values that and experiences that happen to them before they even interact with another individual, and that ends up being the thing that lead to conflict from time to time, eliminating those. And then he talked a lot about, you know, sort of the strength of the program, how it's been built through state law, and how it actually, for those who are state employees, has been used quite often in state agencies.
Yeah, that was actually kind of surprising. When I was looking up some stuff about conflicts and dispute resolution center of Thurston County, they have this thing on their website. They call it the Strengthening Connections Community Impact Report.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the quotes on there is from somebody who works at the Senate. And I was just like, wait a minute. The Senate is using a company, like an organization for dispute and conflicts in their own work groups.
Yeah.
Like, I thought, okay, that's crazy. And the cynic in me was just like, what am I paying you for, people?
Right.
Pass some bills already.
Yeah.
But it's true. I mean, like, that's probably like a highly contentious workspace.
Yeah, you know? And I mean, you know, and you talk about coming with preconceived things. Yeah. I mean, if you're coming to a political conversation in a place like the Senate, you definitely have preconceived either notions of what the other person thinks or you have your own value system that you feel either is under attack or is questioned at all times. So it definitely is the perfect breeding ground for conflict that might not be resolved unless you bring in a mediator.
Yeah, that's true.
One of the things that Joe mentioned, which may not slip into the podcast, we want to make sure that we mention it off the top, is that they are looking for volunteers. So for those of you who are state employees or people listening to the pod who don't know if you want to necessarily give money or can't, they are actually looking for they're looking for people who they can take through the training process, get credentialed, and be volunteer mediators.
Yeah.
So if you're ever interested in that, we'll have more on the site available for you to take a look at. We wanted to make sure we mentioned that so that Joe gets an opportunity to get that in.
Yeah, like if you wanted to be a lawyer when you were a kid and you never went to school for it. Hey,
because law school seemed like, you know, that's another extra like 3 or 4 years. No, thank
this could be a thing. You could give it a try and see. Is this something I like? I think that there's probably a lot of people out there who'd say yes.
Very cool. Very cool. So before we get into the podcast, though, you have a question of the pod that I like, but I'm not sure I'm going to be able to answer. So
see, I like it, too. And I think my answer will be pretty vague.
OK.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not a rabbit hole question today.
And no, this is a pretty easy one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Philip Kerrigan.
Yes.
What's the stupidest argument you've ever gotten into?
Well, I'm married, so I get into stupid arguments all the time.
Hi, Joanne.
Yeah. Hi, babe. And frankly, they're usually started by me.
Oh, are they?
No. It starts off with like my wife, Joanne, sets out a regular thing to talk about.
Okay.
Like in a regular tone.
She's like, hello, I want to speak to you
about
this
subject. And I get very sort of like, I don't know why, I get like real Boston. Like, you talking down to me? You think you're better than me?
Oh,
like,
no.
Like I get very already, so I'm amped. And so like things like, you know that movie, The Breakup?
Yeah,
with Vince Vaughn, where he and Jennifer Aniston get in an argument about doing the dishes.
Yeah.
And she says, he said, what do you want me to tell you? I did the dishes. And she's like, well, no, I want you to want to do the dishes. And then he says, well, that's crazy. Why would I want to do dishes?
Yeah.
That is probably a verbatim argument I've had.
Nice.
The trash on a Monday night. I get reminded at least 12 times before the evening ends that the trash has got to be taken out. And then, of course, the worst part is the one time that we didn't talk about it, I forgot.
Uh-oh.
And so then now
she reminds
like,
you 12 times and then you get upset.
Yeah. I think if we're going to go mom corner on this, because she listens to the pod now.
Yeah.
I think most of my passion in my arguments come from my mother's side. She's a very passionate lady, very well constructed debater.
Okay.
And so I try as hard as I can.
When you're in a dispute with your lady, do you feel that you are very constructive in your responses like your mom taught you?
No, absolutely not. No. My mom is such a smart lady, and she's so the way that she debates her point with you or tries to convince you of like what you should do. This happened even when I was a kid when she tried to tell me not to do drugs. You know what I mean? Like,
Then you didn't listen?
I did listen.
Throwing you under the bus.
She's always just so well constructed and then the proper amount of dispassionate. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
Like passionate about the issue, but like able from time to time to take that out. Right? I can do the first part where like I'm very passionate about an issue and I feel like I've constructed my stuff well.
Okay.
And then the moment where I need to not be passionate about it anymore, I fail miserably.
Yeah,
just keep going.
You can't reel it back
I think I've literally put my wife to sleep arguing with her. She's still arguing with me, but her eyes are closing, and I'm like, and it's over. This conversation's over. I don't understand. Then I get mad that she's not listening anymore.
So you're still amped up.
Yeah, no. No, I get amped pretty fast. What about you? What's some of the stupidest arguments you've ever gotten into?
I think the stupidest arguments for me are the ones where you're saying something and the person you're talking to is saying the exact same thing but in a slightly different way, and neither one of you are really getting that you're saying the exact same thing, you're on the exact same page at the exact same time.
Have you ever gotten to a point in one of those arguments where you literally yell the idea like, well, we're talking about the same thing,
And then they're just like, no, we're not. Yeah.
I think we actually agree on this.
Yes.
You're like yelling yeah, you're at the yelling person at that we agree.
We're on the same page. Yes, totally.
Right, yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, I've been there.
Or just been like, I have to leave the room because you're just being so dumb about this.
Right.
We're saying the same things.
Right.
Or
right.
if you get into a discussion with somebody and instead of like, if they give you an answer.
Yeah.
And you're just like, I don't understand how you mean.
Yeah.
But then they say the exact same words over to you. Yes. And you're like, okay, so what about that?
Yes. I feel like too.
Still
one,
don't get it.
I feel like one of the things that happens to me with arguments is that like because you've gone over your opinion mm-hmm. so many times in your own head
yeah.
that you're like, this is crystal clear. It's totally logical what I'm saying to
you. The things that come out of your mouth, your missing pieces.
Yes, and so they are talking to you, and in your head, you're like, I don't understand how you don't understand,
mm-hmm.
right? But you don't realize that you have gone over this a million times.
Yeah, and that they're doing the same exact thing.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that I find a lot, where I'm like, I feel like I'm crazy. I can't understand how you don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that happened.
Well, then you want to just throw your hands in the air, throw all your papers in the air, and walk out of the room.
Get out of here. Yeah, yeah, get out of there. Yeah, so those are some good examples of what not to do
yeah.
in conflict, just yeah. to let everybody know. Joe, we're going to toss it to the interview with Joe Sanders, the community engagement manager, who is going to talk a little bit about what you can do
yeah.
To make these disputes better and how the Resolution Center of Thurston County actually helps folks get through those things. Here it is. We're here with Joe Sanders, the Community Engagement Manager for the Dispute Resolution Center of Thurston County. Joe, thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So first, let's start off with something very easy. Can you talk a little bit about the history of the organization and what it is that you do for the community?
Okay. The Dispute Resolution Center here in Thurston County came into being in 1991.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of 21 dispute resolution centers in Washington
okay.
that were made possible by an actual enactment by the legislature
oh, wow.
to provide alternative dispute resolution options
sure, sure.
other than the court system for people statewide.
Oh, cool, cool. So why would the average person in Washington need a mediator?
We like to say that conflict is normal. Conflict is a fact of life for most people. Our mission is that every person in every walk of life, business situation, has some conflict resolution and communication skills that mm-hmm. are healthy and respectful.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that as having a follow-on effect that benefits the community as a
mm-hmm.
whole.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people have a very sticky situation
yeah,
that
yeah.
they find themselves
yeah.
in. You know, we like to say it's normal. Our mission is to help people navigate conflict.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Any aspect of someone's family life,
mm-hmm.
Work life,
mm-hmm.
Interactions in the community are going to have conflict.
Yeah, mm-hmm. right.
True, yeah.
Right.
And we see everything from coworker conflict to parent and teen conflict.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just legal conflict then. You're not just preventing folks, or not preventing, you're not just helping folks who can't make it to small claims court over something. It's literally like almost any sort of dispute
right.
can be resolved.
That's right.
That's
although,
excellent.
You know, business and customer conflict is mm-hmm. is a good example of something
yeah.
that typically ends up in small claims
right.
court.
Right.
And we actually partner with the district court
mm-hmm.
to have mediators
oh,
on
cool.
site
yeah.
During every single session of small claims court.
Wow.
And our judges actually suggest to the parties mm-hmm. in the room that they give mediation a try
yeah.
Before he comes back and
wow.
He or she comes back
yeah.
and does the ruling.
Yeah. Wow. That's cool. So then how do folks kind of get in touch with the Dispute Resolution Center? And let's say if it's something that they've gone to small claims court mm-hmm. for and they're just really looking to solve an issue that they have between each other. How do they typically find your organization?
Well, we find that more and more people come to us through an online search.
Uh-huh.
Just like
yeah,
anything
yeah,
else.
Yeah, Google, I'm upset.
Yeah, right?
I want to talk to you. Yeah, right.
we have what we call a conflict resolution resource line. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, most of our work is done by volunteers, and that resource line is staffed by volunteers.
Yeah.
People sometimes are referred. Sometimes they just call out of the blue.
Right.
And our volunteers walk them through what their situation is, often do some conflict coaching to kind of drill down what have you done so far, what have you tried,
right.
what's been successful.
Because that would seem to be an issue. Where
what have you tried?
Yeah, like they automatically are like, well, I have to find somebody else to talk to about this, right? You haven't actually gone through any of the steps by the time you do that.
Yeah, sometimes I have, sometimes I haven't.
Yeah,
We often act as the go-between between them and the other party.
Okay.
Sometimes there's some back and forth, and the situation might be resolved through that.
Yeah.
Sometimes it ends up in the two parties actually sitting down and having an actual mediation session.
Yeah.
We average at least one a day.
Okay.
Face-to-face mediation session. So that's a lot.
Yeah, yeah. That could also probably get pretty intense as well, I would assume.
Yes.
From time to time. Yeah. Yes.
So in your experience working in Thurston County as part of the Dispute Resolution Center, what are the most common types of disputes that you're seeing here? Is it work conflicts, or is it like conflicts in the home? Like what are the most common ones?
For better or for worse, the most common conflict is related to relationships.
Oh.
Okay.
Family. Yeah. Yeah. Divorce-related situations.
Okay.
And if a couple is going through divorce proceedings, they're actually required to have mediation if there's a child involved.
Okay. Mm.
To sit down and work out the parenting plan for those children.
Yeah.
And part of our mediator's role is to get them to focus on what's best for the child.
Sure.
Because sometimes it gets adversarial between the parties.
Yeah, and I would assume. I mean, it's got to happen.
Yeah.
We, as I said, we do a lot of small claims type mediation.
Uh-huh.
Some of it just happens in the courthouse and is resolved in 15 or 20 minutes.
Actually. That's always a good little itty bitty case, right?
Yeah.
It's what we call speed mediation.
Right. Nice, nice.
Often it's a small business owner and a customer.
Yeah.
Okay.
You got a beef with your car mechanic,
for
instance.
Yeah.
A very common scenario are homeowners associations.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I could see that.
I want to paint my house orange.
Yep.
You won't let me.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
We're doing a lot more work in the workplace and dealing with workplace conflict, including with state agencies.
Yeah.
We actually have a contract with Department of Enterprise Services to provide workplace conflict mediation for state employees.
Wow.
It could either be conflict between two coworkers. It could be conflict between a supervisor and staff member.
Mm-hmm.
It might be conflict between the agency and a vendor or a client.
Yeah.
So all those different scenarios. So we are set up to step in and provide whatever service.
Yeah.
Sometimes it involves training. So that's another common occurrence.
Yeah. Do you have more often single clients, like one person, as opposed to like five or six or a group of people versus somebody?
Our most common are just one party on each side.
Mm-hmm.
But we do a number of multi-party mediations, which really involve, we've got one going on, I think now has four.
Okay.
Wow.
Four parties.
Wow.
Those are a little bit more challenging.
What's the biggest one that you've ever worked on?
I don't have the answer to that.
No, yeah.
Actually.
Yeah.
So you kind of hit on it a little bit. You oftentimes are in small claims court, and they'll say something like, well, you should try mediation first before I make my ruling, or they offer that up. when something like that happens and two parties agree on, you know, maybe even unofficially agree on some terms, can one party then go back to court and attempt to rearrange the terms that were put together during your dispute resolution? Have you noticed that ever happening before, where somebody goes, I accept the terms in the room, but later on goes, no, I'm not. That's not something I'm interested in anymore. I want to pursue something else. Have you ever seen that? And in those cases, do you then have sort of the ability to go back to the drawing board and try again?
The final product of the mediation is actually a written document.
Okay.
That lays out, after they go through the process of identifying the key issues,
yeah,
back and forth, finding, you know, the common ground that they can agree on.
Yeah.
That is actually set in writing,
yeah,
and both parties sign that agreement,
yeah,
before the mediation is completed.
Okay.
And that is technically a legally binding.
That's
document.
Awesome. Okay. That's awesome. Great. Man, every single one of my disputes should be that in real
so
life.
So that's what you're doing moving forward.
That's right. One of the things that...
I'm never going to anything with you like that,
yeah,
ever.
Heather, I'd like to speak to you about the refrigerator.
Yeah, right?
Wow. That's really... So going in and coming out, if they come to a resolution, it's like chances are that, number one, all things have been exhausted during that particular process, and then what comes out is pretty clear and pretty binding for everybody involved.
What we find is, well, we track our success rate,
yeah,
satisfaction rate. It's last year it's been 87% of the people that,
nice,
go to mediation actually come out with some type of settlement between
the two.
Very
cool.
What the judge emphasizes in small claims court, for, mm-hmm, instance, is if he makes a ruling, he or she makes a ruling,
yeah,
that's no guarantee that the one party will collect,
yeah,
from the,
yeah,
other.
Right, right.
So, you know, our approach is if it's a win-win agreement, it's a lot easier to,
yeah,
follow through with.
Yeah, awesome.
So you talked a little bit about it before, like the contract you have with DES to work within state agencies. And I saw on one of your brochures, I think maybe that one, that you had a quote from a member of the Senate on there talking about conflict resolution and working with your group. So as far as any kind of state agencies go, is that something where you as a group are involved in more often than not? Or was that something that you've been doing since the DRC has been founded?
Our partnership with state government's always been strong, you know, being,
Olympia,
you know, located here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, you know, there's basically three key parts of what we do. You know, uh-huh, one of them is the conflict resolution, which is the mediation piece.
Yeah.
Another is conflict prevention.
Okay.
And a lot of that revolves around training.
Mm-hmm.
Training people in healthy communication skills,
yeah,
in how to recognize something that has the potential to escalate.
Yeah,
yeah.
And we've partnered with Department of Corrections, Department of Transportation,
yeah, yeah,
Department of Health, a number, mm-hmm, of agencies.
All forward-facing customer service agencies,
right,
as well. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
And we, another piece of that is what we call facilitation, or group facilitation, to help a group work through challenging issues.
Okay.
And, you know, a major undertaking this last year was to help the legislature develop their new code of workplace conflict.
Okay.
And we were excited. The plaques are actually up in the building now. I was walking around and seeing those.
Were you like, that's mine? That's,
yeah,
mine.
Yeah,
that's mine.
That's
so
cool.
It was exciting. It was a, you know, a very involved process,
yeah,
to see that result in actual legislation.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. So listen up, state employees. This is a charity that that actually interacts with what we do.
Yeah.
So Joe, one of the things that that we've actually noticed is dispute amongst kids and school age children. What a lot of people don't know is Dispute Resolution Center of Thurston County has a program that you guys are working on right now that has to deal with conflict in schools, especially for kids. Can you talk a little bit about that?
You know, we view, you know, nurturing and mentoring the next generation as really critical,
mm-hmm,
if we're going to improve the tone of civility and civic harmony.
Yeah.
And we've been piloting this program. It's called Youth Empowerment Services in with elementary and middle school and high school aged with kind of different programming for each group. Mm-hmm. And we're partnering with every school district in South Mason and Thurston counties.
Yeah.
We find that that's critical to help young people find those skills.
Right.
They may not be seeing or, you know, hearing them at home
in
their home environment.
Yeah. Right, right.
Yeah.
So we go in and teach these. We have something called the Peacemaker Clubs.
Cool.
Which is kind of an after-school activity at the elementary level.
Yeah.
One of our first pilot programs was with Tumwater Middle School, where we actually did a program that every single student went through as part of their health curriculum.
Yeah.
And the school staff said they immediately noticed a positive difference in the the culture and tone in their building.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an area that there's a lot of interest in and a lot of demand for.
Right.
So we, you know, our challenge to meet that demand, and that's where a lot of the funds that we're raising is going towards, and it's something that's really resonating with people that they want to financially support.
Right.
So that that's really a key piece. And of course, the other aspect that donors are supporting is to make all our services affordable for people, whether it's a training or mediation itself. So we have a sliding fee scale for people.
Yeah.
That we can provide the services at a cost that meets their financial circumstances.
Right. Yeah, excellent.
So do you have any upcoming events or programs you'd like to highlight before we go?
We have our third annual breakfast workshop coming up in October, focusing on workplace conflict. And that's going to be on October 22nd at the South Puget Sound Community College Lacey campus in their education center. Mm-hmm. And it's a breakfast workshop, and it's going to cover prevention and also how to resolve conflicts that arise in the workplace. So it's our third year of doing this, as I said, and we have people coming from small businesses, large employers, city, county, state agencies, and other nonprofits that all, you know, want to gain those skills and bring them back to their workplace.
Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, Joe, thank you very much for coming on and talking a little bit about the Dispute Resolution Center of Thurston County. We really appreciate you coming on and talking about what is frankly an essential service, I think, in this day and age. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, so that was our interview with Joe Sanders, the Community Engagement Manager of the Dispute Resolution Center of Thurston County. Thank you, Joe, for coming on. As a reminder, if you want to volunteer for this pretty sweet organization that deals with something that everybody encounters on a daily basis, you can check out our website or go to their website, and there's more information on that.
Yeah.
So you have trivia, facts and figures? What do we have
today? I
have
more facts and figures
today. Okay.
So we didn't actually go through any kind of this is how you can look at a conflict and resolve it, right?
Yes.
So there are, you know, some strategies out there.
Okay.
So there's this thing on the internet.
Sure.
You know, so it's true.
Yeah,
first of all, everything in this paper is true.
Yeah.
Five conflict resolution strategies we all use.
Okay.
Okay. So number one, avoidance, which is not.
That's not a resolution.
Great. It's not so much resolution, but we do it. Everybody does it.
Yeah.
So it's just when you withdraw or ignore a conflict. And it's one of those things where if the the resolution for the confrontation, it, that doesn't matter. That reward doesn't matter.
Okay.
Like, it's just too much. I'm going to avoid moving on.
Okay.
Competing is another one.
Mm-hmm.
Competing is used by people who go into a conflict planning to win. So that might be a little
that's the old lady friend. It's the old win-lose.
Yeah.
It's the old win-lose. Oh, no, that's the argument my wife and I have all the time.
Yeah.
The win-lose.
Yeah.
And let me tell you something. PK loses a lot.
Yeah.
Because I get too crazy.
At least you are true to yourself.
I don't keep my wits about me when we're arguing. I just lose it.
She knows this by now, I'm sure.
Yeah, she's really... Yeah. I believe more than a few times there's been this, okay, you're going to have to calm down.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I also like how you're kind of more sullen as you're discussing this. Like, you're just a little more like...
Well, definitely. Like, yeah. I've walked away from a few and been like, I lost that one for sure.
Another strategy, accommodating. So it's where one party gives in to the wishes or demands of another. So they're being cooperative, but not assertive.
They don't love it.
They might not be getting anything that they need.
Yeah, yeah.
Like avoidance. So it could be unresolved issues.
Yes. And it comes back to bite you.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Another one, collaborating. So we're talking about both people being assertive enough and cooperative enough.
Sure.
Okay. And then compromising. So it's where everybody is assertive, cooperative, but then giving up just a little bit to get...
Yeah.
The goal achieved.
Yeah, that's what I've found before. Like the 7 habits of highly effective people, one of the things they talk about is how like compromise isn't actually win-win.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, because like, you are giving up something.
Yeah, you're giving up something. Yeah. I don't understand how though, and we didn't get into this with Joe, so it'd be interesting to ask him at some point. Like, I don't understand. There has to be some conversations where a win-win just cannot happen and a compromise is the only way out.
Yeah.
I would think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then I would like to share with you 6 wars fought for ridiculous reasons.
Oh, this is good.
Yeah. Okay. So this came from thehistorychannel.com.
Okay, so it's better than the internet.
Yeah, so a little better. Okay, so in 1859 on San Juan Island, there was this incident called the Pig War.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
You know all about the Pig War?
I do know all about the Pig War.
Okay, so the first and only shots of the Pig War came June 15th, 1859, when an American farmer named Lyman Cutler gunned down a British-owned black boar after he discovered the animal rooting through his potato patch.
Uh-huh.
And pretty much you had the Americans, the British... an absurd standoff with Navy vessels and the coastline.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it lasted for weeks, the standoff.
Yes.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
Luckily, only the pig died.
Great news, everybody.
Yeah, great news. That ridiculous war, only the pig died.
Yeah.
In 1532 AD, there was this thing called the Nika Riot.
Okay.
Okay. So massive mobs flooded the streets of Constantinople, burning large parts of the city and nearly toppling the government of Emperor Justinian.
Wow.
And it was all because of chariot racing.
Wow, really?
So they had these races that were held. They were really massively popular. And there were really two big kind of factions. So there were blues and greens,
okay,
you know, based off of their colors.
Yeah.
And Justinian had... he refused to release 2 members of the Blues and Greens who were condemned to death.
Whoa.
So they joined up together, these fans, lost their minds and rioted in the city. So eventually Justinian was like, okay. But 30,000 members of the mob lay dead around the grounds of the chariot racing place, the Hippodrome.
Oh my gosh.
So that was a lot of people who died for, you know, kind of a ridiculous thing.
Yeah.
Then there's this thing called the War of the Stray Dog.
Okay.
Okay. So this is 20th century.
Okay.
A dog inadvertently triggered an international crisis. There was a time between Greece and Bulgaria that was really like hostile, and they'd been at odds after the Second Balkan War in the 1910s.
Okay.
So tensions finally boiled over in October 1925 when a Greek soldier was shot after allegedly crossing the border into Bulgaria. When he was chasing his runaway dog.
That's awesome.
So his shooting became a rallying cry for the Greeks, and then they invaded Bulgaria.
Oh, they invaded
several villages. Yeah.
Wow.
Several villages.
Wow.
Occupied them, and they were set to commence shelling of a city when the League of Nations was like, whoa, no,
yeah,
don't do this.
Please don't.
So the misunderstanding altogether did result in the death of about 50 people.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Because a dog wandered across a border.
Wow.
Yeah. There was the War of Jenkins' Ear.
Okay.
Okay. So in 1738,
these are great names,
right?
By the way.
Right. And this is a very British name.
Yeah.
The War of Jenkins'
the
Ear.
The War of Jenkins' Ear.
Mm-hmm. In 1738, a British mariner named Robert Jenkins, he displayed a severed, decomposing ear before the members of Parliament.
Okay.
Okay, so as part of a formal testimony, he claimed that a Spanish Coast Guard officer had sliced off his ear 7 years earlier as punishment for smuggling.
Okay.
Okay, so this was apparently...
So he's holding a seven-year-old decaying ear.
Yes, okay. And he's claiming that it's his.
It's his own.
His own
Even
ear.
Though he probably... Did he have 2 ears at the time?
I wonder. That doesn't say.
Yeah, see, that would have been interesting.
Yeah, like, dude, you got 2 ears. Where'd like, this
hey,
one come
hey,
from?
You actually have 2 ears on your head. Fake news.
Fake news. So his testimony apparently was just like stirring extraordinarily. Yeah. So people removed. So the British decided, you know what? Let's declare war on Spain. 7 years after this dude lost his ear. Okay.
Oh my gosh.
So in truth, it was kind of like the catalyst because tensions had been brewing between Britain and Spain for a very long time. But, you know, it was more about territorial disputes like Spanish Florida, British Georgia. That kind of
but
stuff.
But this dude with his ear is the one who
He's
put it over
the
top.
He's the one who pushed it over the edge. Wow. Yeah. So kind of ridiculous.
That's terrible.
The Toledo War. Do you know about the Toledo War?
I've never heard of the Toledo
War. Oh, yeah. That's you know, in our home country here.
Toledo, Ohio?
Yeah.
Oh, well, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So Upper Peninsula. Okay.
Okay.
So Michigan and Ohio.
Yeah.
There was an argument in 1803.
Okay.
The newly formed state of Ohio took ownership over a sliver of land. It contained the city of Toledo.
Okay.
Michigan was like, no, that's ours.
They want the bustling city of
that is ours.
Toledo.
Yeah, and Toledo's on water, so was very much a port and a lot of income for the city.
Today,
right?
Today that fight wouldn't seem to be as like electrified.
No, I don't think that.
Who's going to fight over Toledo, Ohio today?
Well, there are people still who are like, no.
Today?
Yeah, the UPs, they're like, this is garbage. Yeah.
That's awesome.
There's still people who like are mad about it.
Yeah.
Both sides wrestled for political control of the territory, raised militias to defend against invasions from the other.
Wow.
Okay. And then at the time, President Andrew Jackson, he was desperate for those Ohio votes.
Yeah.
So he intervened in 1835. By 1836, a compromise was sealed, which saw Michigan Territory relinquish that part of land.
Okay.
And they got statehood, but also the biggest portion of the Upper Peninsula.
Okay.
So... they got this stuff. Many viewed the decision as a grave injustice.
Yeah.
But some other people were like, I'm okay being an Ohioan because, quote, thank the Lord, I never did like that Michigan weather anyway.
Right? That's awesome. And that is the root of your Michigan-Ohio State rivalry
yep,
right
that's
there.
That's right there. Right
wow.
There.
That is cool.
And then the last one we'll talk about is the Pastry War.
That sounds delicious.
I know, right? If only. If only wars could be fought with, like, croissants and bear claws.
They fired an apple fritter.
That one's cherry. I wanted lemon. Right?
Yeah.
So in 1828, angry mobs destroyed large parts of Mexico City during a military coup.
Okay.
One of the victims was, he was rioting, and he is an expatriate French pastry chef named Raymondel.
Mm-hmm.
His cafe was ransacked by looters.
Okay.
So he, you know, complained to the Mexican government.
Yes.
They ignored his complaints. Then he later petitioned the French government for compensation. His request sat unnoticed for a whole decade.
Oh, sweet.
Okay.
Wow.
Government at its finest.
I know.
Also, you know, like kings and queens, they're not really, they don't care.
The whole night.
So his request sat unnoticed. It came to the attention of King Louis Philippe, and he was furious already just because Mexico had failed to repay millions in loans.
Okay.
So now, finding this thing from Raymondel, he demanded that Mexican government pay 600,000 pesos to compensate the pastry chef for his losses.
Okay.
So they were like, no, we're not doing that, King Louis Philippe.
Yeah.
Then King Louis was like, well, guess what?
We're going
Start
to war.
A war.
Wow.
So in October 1838, a French fleet arrived in Mexico and blockaded the city of Veracruz.
That's awesome.
The Mexican government still refused to pay. So the ships began shelling the San Juan de Ulula Citadel. There were a bunch of minor battles, and by December, as many as 250 soldiers had been killed.
Wow.
For something that had happened 10 years earlier.
Wow. Okay.
And then the General Santa Anna, he even came out of retirement to lead a Mexican army against the French.
What?
Yes.
That's
and he
crazy.
Lost a leg after he was wounded in that war.
So he came out of retirement to fight a ridiculous war, and that's when he lost a leg.
And that's when he lost a leg.
Oh, Santa.
And then as part of the treaty, like the British government came in to help broker a peace deal, and part of the treaty, the Mexican government was forced to pay out that $600,000 peso fee.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
See, people, we have gotten in stupid, ridiculous fights forever.
Where people die in the streets because...
30,000 people in that one. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That is all very interesting stuff.
Yeah, fact.
Yes.
The internet says it's true. It's a fact.
So before we leave, I want to hit you with some upcoming events. Actually, I want to talk a little bit about a few events that happened over this last weekend. The LNI Fur Baby Fun Run happened at Capitol Lake, and the LNI volunteers also put together a really, really sweet car show that was pretty neat. Had a chance to go to that. This Saturday, we have a softball tournament sponsored by the volunteers at the Employment Security Department up at Game Farm Parks in Auburn. Should be pretty fun. I will be there, I think, all day. I am the MC of that particular thing.
Wow, look at you.
I'm the hype man for this thing.
Yeah.
The volunteers at Correctional Industries have their annual golf tournament on August 17th at Eagles Pride in DuPont. Then DRS is putting together a fun run, nerd herd theme this year. So come out in your biggest nerd costumes, I guess.
Yeah, I'm sure, like suspenders and glasses,
yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah. That's on September 14th, same day, Golf for Veterans on September 14th. We are also now selling tickets for the Masquerade Ball that is on October 19th here at the Capitol Building. So if you have a chance, check out the site for those. That is it for our show on conflict and disputes. We want to thank Joe Sanders, the Community Engagement Manager from Dispute Resolution Center of Thurston County, for coming by, and we will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.